This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
TNA is the best wrestling in the whole world!
Welcome everybody to You've Got to Be Kidding Me, episode number 5, covering October 2002 in the history of TNA wrestling. I'm Garrett Kidney, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Liam Jones. Liam, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm here. Today was all over the place, as it can be at times. And before we get too heavy into the podcast, I wanted to take a small opportunity to talk about one Jamal, real hero, who we found passed away today through the Twitter machine. And I just wanted to talk, you know, a little briefly about Jamal and how he'll go down as one of the, you know, the least credited people in the Puro US expansion, despite being a massive factor in it, being one of the people that I first started interacting with online in the wrestling media sphere. We were all a part of the Wrestling with Words back in the day. Just another sad loss for the internet wrestling community, I guess. And yeah, I just wanted to talk about Jamal a little bit because I don't think we ever agreed on a single thing ever in our online discussions, but was always a fun person to talk to and someone that I wish I had have kept up with more after the Wrestling with Words split. But yeah, I just wanted to give a little shout out to Jamal because, you know, he is going to go down as having a wide and varied influence on Puro's reception in the US and the world, really. And that's something that might not get brought up or brought up to the extent that it should be, you know?
In the last year, we've lost so many pillars of, like, the wrestling community and, like, niches within the wrestling community as well. Because we lost Larry Zonka, who reviewed literally everything. Mm. I watch less wrestling now because I don't have Larry's reviews anymore.
Mm.
Especially WWE, because I don't know, like, the difference between what's a decent WWE match that's overhyped by WWE fans and what's an actual WWE TV match worth watching. Larry used to be my benchmark for that, and he's passed away. Like, Casey Michael used to do more for women's wrestling in the US than literally probably anybody else.
It's funny how, like, it's become, like, on the onus of these super fans to really deliver it to that level, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Jamal was probably the premier archivist in wrestling, not just Puro, probably. Like, you could probably just expand it to in wrestling, maybe up there with a Monsoon Classic.
And The Ditch.
I didn't interact with him, like, on a personal level as much as you did, but the loss that will be felt by the community is the same as Larry Zonka, is the same as Casey Michael. It just leaves a hole there.
And especially to this day, too, because, you know, Jamal was uploading stuff fucking daily, you know, like to this day, still keeping up with Puro uploads. And, you know, I think that's going to be something that we're all going to see an immediate response to with his unfortunate passing. And I was talking to him on Twitter about some Gleet shows, getting them uploaded and stuff. So it's, yeah, to this day, still, you know, committed to it and just uploading a insane amount of footage for people, opening people's eyes to companies that never would have been seen ever, like, without him, you know what I mean? Outside of Japan, at the very least.
And doing it all for free.
Yeah.
Like, literally just out of the passion of it. There's probably some people who would be like, oh, I could take all this Puro stuff and I can put it behind some kind of paywall and charge people for it and, you know, cackle in glee. But no, you just did it all for free so people could watch these shows.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's probably some newer Puro fans out there now who wouldn't have even known the absolute majesty and just the holy grail that was the Real Hero Archive for years. Like, something I would go to every day to download whatever new show had gone up. My first years off campus, after I moved off campus from university and I didn't have Wi-Fi for 6 months, I would go to university and after my classes, head down to the library and just download like 20 full shows that Jamal had uploaded over the week just to get me through going back home to no internet. So just an absolute asset to the community and someone that's going to be completely sorely missed. And just a good dude. And you can tell like the influence that he had because so many wrestlers have come out and expressed their own stories and their own thanks to him for his work that he had done over these years for, like, absolutely no monetary value, so... Yeah.
And it was Chris Hero that broke the news.
Yeah. Chris Hero broke the news. Jonah Rock made a wonderful post. Davey Boy Smith Jr. It's, yeah, a lot. I hope this is one of these names that we can do our part as, you know, the internet wrestling, the IWC. We can do our part for some good and, you know, keep the name out there and give the credit that is due.
Well said. Now we got to talk about some stupid TNA.
Just a quick hop, skip, and a jump over to October of 2002, you know?
Yes, indeed. So we are covering October 2002. Shout out, by the way, all to our patrons? They're patrons.
I say patrons, but you have written Patreons multiple times, so I don't know what the answer is.
So the answer is I'm wrong and stupid. So
I should have assumed.
Yeah, if you're like, what's the deal? What's going on with this dude? It's usually I'm wrong and stupid, so you can just assume that. Who subscribe to patreon.com/kiddingme. We have more patrons than patrons than we've ever had. So thank you to everybody who's gone over there and subscribed for our watch-alongs, our second show covering the 2020 Monday Night Wars and so much more. And our watch-along of NWA TNA pay-per-view number 19 is up now as we speak, if you'd like to listen along to us watching that show before we cover it here.
It was a real fun one. Go listen to it before you listen to this.
Or at the same time.
That seems counterproductive.
Put one in the right ear, one in the left ear, and hope it works.
What about the actual show as well?
Yeah.
That's three audio channels hitting you at once.
I'm not sure how... You don't have three ears, so that might be more difficult.
Just find another hole.
I don't advise eating earphones, but yes.
Oh yeah, you can eat it too, I guess.
So we are covering October 2002. As we mentioned last month, TNA was deep in negotiations with Panda Energy to sell a majority interest in the company to Panda and get most of the debt off of Jeff and Jerry's back. It's still... The sale hasn't been closed in the month of October, but there has been... drama through the month of October, Liam.
There's never been a month without drama.
Because, like, not much actually happens in terms of the deal. Like, most of the actual details were hammered out in September, and October is more just like, yeah, still going through the motions, dotting some T's, crossing some I's, as they say.
In the world of business, which we are knowledgeable about. Well, you know about business.
I do have a business degree and a master's degree in economics, so... I should know about business. Should know and do know are two different things.
Why aren't you a billionaire now?
Because I'm too busy doing things about TNA.
Why didn't we meet the 28-year-old who invested in cryptocurrency?
And is now a billionaire. And it turns out he invested his dad's money in cryptocurrency, and his dad is the inventor of cryptocurrency.
And his dad is a cryptocurrency.
Yes, he just got the cryptocurrency from his cryptocurrency father.
Yeah, the sentient cryptocurrency come back to destroy and rule us all.
I do love those articles.
I mean, they're tremendous. It's tremendous art.
It is. Like, to be fair, like, the new clickbait is not like a headline that you have to click to find out. The new clickbait is Shrek is a bad movie and you're all stupid dum-dums for liking it. And then everyone dunks at it. And there you go. You got more clicks than you'll ever get from writing, like, a good review of something.
That's also what, like, that's just what all these tweets are, too. It's just like, here is my tweet and it's like, oh, fuck, I can't think of an example, but... Dante Martin is actually awful poo-poo bad, and you were bad if you liked his breakout match. And everyone's like, oh, I gotta jump in and defend my takes.
People can't just let a shit take go across their timeline without dunking on it. It's physically impossible. You see it, and you cannot help but quote tweet it.
I literally did that 23 minutes ago.
Oh, what was it? We must read it on air now.
At Wrestling Shoot 2. With the logo in the AEW font that says Shit Elite Wrestling.
There you go.
This is only AEW is good at for the wrong reasons.
Okay, that's a coherent sentence.
Yes.
A good start.
One, bad storylines with no build-up. Two, botches. Three, too focused on taking shots at WWE.
Four, such dork.
Signing XWE talent when they said they won't. Five, burying talent. Six.
Who do they bury?
Bad booking by the idiots, (EVP), seven, Tony Khan, #AEW, #wrestling.
All of Tony? It's just all of Tony is bad?
And then a follow-up tweet which said, "I could name so many more. This show is so sad and pathetic. This company ruins wrestling. Also, their pathetic fans also ruins wrestling too. Hashtag AEW, hashtag wrestling, hashtag wrestling community, hashtag wrestling Twitter, hashtag AEW sucks, hashtag AEW suck, hashtag."
So, this person has 45 Twitter followers.
Can I read some of their responses to people?
One sec, I want to know how you found this tweet first, because this tweet has like two quote tweets.
Would you believe that @mongo_ebooks was dunking on them?
Ah, that makes more sense.
To which some of my favorite responses, which is like, anything that has just incoherent grammar is just charm.
Okay.
Someone said, "Do you have anything that you haven't made up?" To which they responded, "Keep talking or just watching your shit AEW." Someone said, @DaveMeltzer. To which they said, God, "Yep, Dave. I forgot that idiot. I forgot about him because he is worthless. He means nothing to wrestling business. Also, his buddies also don't leave those other idiots too."
Mm-hmm. I'm trying... Brian? Is he talking about Brian?
I guess. There was another one that I can't find now. It might have been deleted, but it was really good.
Well, someone replied with a GIF saying, "You big mad," to which he replied, "No one cares about you and your pathetic life. Take it or leave it. I have opinions on this shit company, and you have yours, so who cares? All caps, bro."
"Those wrestlers who are released are just sore losers. They can't make the big leagues. Just go to shit elite wrestling and get used badly in pathetic storylines and also get buried, even look bad with botches."
Well,
Tony Khan is killing the wrestling business. Hashtag wrestling, hashtag wrestling community, hashtag wrestling Twitter, hashtag AEW suck, hashtag AEW sucks, hashtag Mark, hashtag idiot.
Like, AEW has gotten into this person's head so much that they have set up a Twitter account entirely, 100% devoted to getting angry at AEW.
"I am here to have opinions on the company called SWE Shit Elite Wrestling." That's not the right order. "Shit Elite Wrestling. AEW marks, deal with it, your precious AEW sucks. Yes, I have a channel."
This person tweets literally every day.
Mm.
And has done so since February.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely. Nothing else. All devoted to how much they hate AEW.
It's a good bit, though. "Haha, AEW marks, the idiot strike again. I don't care about you all and your pathetic life. You all need to understand to accept criticism."
It's so strange. It's like, why does this company get under these people's skin so much? Like, why? Well,
I think it's just because all they've known for so long was WWE, so they built up some sort of, like, allegiance. "AEW marks just ruin wrestling, and that pathetic company condone their behavior from all the stupid fans they have. What a pack of lowlives. And no surprise, idiots will strike again about this tweet."
Like, why? I understand why it happens, because people define their personality by the things they like, which is a thing you should not do. No matter how much you like something, it should never become your personality to like that thing. Like, for years of my life, I have watched TNA Wrestling and supported TNA Wrestling, and for the vast majority of that, I have been able to say TNA Wrestling is pretty bad.
Mm.
Because I am a normal human being who can enjoy something and root for something without investing so much of my personality in something that an attack on it is an attack on me. And that's what happened. Like, AEW's mere existence became an attack on WWE fans in a way that just sent them off the deep end.
Mm.
And you saw, like, it's the exact same stuff you saw with TNA toward, like, the end of the Spike era.
The TNA Asylum.
No, the TNA Asylum was alright. The Asylum was mostly, like, the diehard fans who weren't absolute loons.
Mm.
But then you got Mecca, who, like, did go all the way off the deep end.
You're just mad because they made a bunch of threads about you.
They do hate me, it's true. But every bad news story about TNA was made up. Everyone was pushing an anti-TNA narrative. And it wasn't just like the show was bad and it was getting cancelled by Spike. So it was a bad year for TNA. No, everyone was pushing these narratives and making all this up. And everyone was... And like, who was vindicated in that situation? The diehard toxic fans or everybody else?
Mm.
The diehard toxic fans are never vindicated.
"Don't talk bad about the thing I like."
Because I see that as an attack on me. Stop it. Stop investing your personality in these things. Just enjoy things. And if they're bad, go find new things to enjoy.
But also, if someone says it's bad and you disagree, just go, okay. I like it. Just saying I like it is just as valid.
Just move on with your life. Like, what are you doing? why do people do this? Why do you commit your entire life to a Twitter? And they're like, it would be one thing. I understand why the AEW botches account does it, because they get tons of traction. So
that's what like, this is too. This is just like that, but it hasn't like gotten off the ground.
Yeah, you're just trying desperately, but you only have 45 followers, so you have it hasn't worked yet. It's like, get over yourself.
The account I don't mind. It's any of the 45 people who followed it that I'm suspicious about.
Hmm.
Anyone who's like, oh, I need this on my feed every day.
We should go back to 2002, Liam, a time before there was Twitter.
Before the internet wrestling community existed.
I believe there was no internet in 2002, just in general, and we could live in our happy, blissful times talking about our Bruce matches.
I would like to have seen the Bruce discussion of 2002.
Would you have, though?
I assume everyone would have put him over as much as I have.
I can only imagine that the message board discussions about Bruce in 2002 were just as delicate and nuanced as the presentation of Bruce in 2002.
The people on the ROH forums like, why isn't Bruce been brought in yet? Bring in Bruce. CZW fans all rallying for Bruce to be brought in.
Bruce should do a death match.
Cage of Bruce.
GCW should bring Bruce in to wrestle Nick Cage.
Yes.
Big Bruce comeback.
What else happened in 2002 of October?
All right, so the big story in 2002, as we were mentioning before we got derailed by Twitter, the Pandas deal was still humming along, and the big thing was some big internal conflict in TNA, because while the Panda deal was moving along, Vince Russo decided to try and get himself in the ear of the Carter family to try and oust Jerry Jarrett and put himself in charge.
I read that first line that's on the notes, where it said that Jerry had sensed bad vibes, and I knew immediately that it was Vince Russo.
Yeah, so the quote from October 2002 in Jerry's book is, I can't explain my feelings, but I sense bad vibes from Dixie tonight. Jeff fears that some of our staff are trying to improve their standing during this transition and maybe poisoning Dixie in an effort to enhance their standing. This always takes place during transitions in a company. I just hope Dixie does not fall victim if this is the case. And like, yeah, same thing. It's like, read that quote. It's like, oh, Russo, you conniving scum.
It's always Russo.
This business is like on the verge of going bust if this deal doesn't go through. People will lose their jobs, everything will fall apart if this deal doesn't go through. And Vince Russo smells blood. He senses an opportunity. He's just like, this moment of transition is a moment of weakness, and I must strike with the Carter family to bury Jerry and push my agenda so I can do my KKK angles and I can do my making light of rape angles that we mentioned last week, so he can get all that
in. Get the women beating.
Oh yeah, and all the misogyny and women beating and all the stuff that comes
sexism,
with Vince Russo's booking.
Homophobia.
He wants to get it all in at perhaps the expense of the... And like, imagine if you're Panda. Imagine if you're like these business executives who work in the energy industry and don't understand pro wrestling. While you're doing this big deal to acquire a pro wrestling company, all you're getting is like backstabbing and conniving and politicking from these goobers.
I like the idea that Vince Russo just smelt blood in the water, and he's like, you know, we're going through a real tough time right now, but I can improve my standing here. Dun-dun, dun-dun.
It is typical. It's like, it worked. That's the worst part. It did seem to work that he got the ear of Dixie and he got the ear of Chris Sobol, who they were putting in charge of TNA on the Panda end. And it just, he did seem to poison the well. He did seem to be like, oh, you know, if you look at how the company's been run so far, Jerry hasn't been doing a good job, has he? Oh, his creative ideas. Oh, that sucks. So I can only imagine during the show, it's like Dixie. It's like, oh, that angle sucked, didn't it, Dixie? Oh, that match should get over. What's happening here, Dixie?
You're just texting Dixie the whole time, saying, oh, I didn't do this one. I did this one, though. No, that was Jerry's idea.
Famously, I remember like reporting in like 07, 08, 09 when people didn't understand TNA stories that it would always be explained, Vince would explain them in depth to Dixie, and that's the reason she would never get mad at him for writing stories that nobody could possibly comprehend, because he explained them to her and I guess then they make sense. So like this is a thing. He's been laying the seeds for his relationship with Dixie right here all the way back in 2002 to do the same thing over and over again for another freaking 10 years.
Problem, like, he's not even like... I don't know. I don't even find him to be, like, a charismatic dude, though. Like, but he has, like, all the hallmarks of one.
Yeah, he's like that sleazebag charisma guy who's... Like, he still has disciples to this day, so you can't say he doesn't have any charisma.
I can.
Well, you can.
I can 100% say that. And did. I get Cornette, right? Like, mm-hmm. Cornette clearly has, like, the gift of the gab, you know what I mean? But it's like, reason I just don't understand.
He seems to get in people's ear, and they seem to stick with him long past the point which they ever should.
He must be, like, good at intersplicing business stuff as well. That's the only way I can think of it, is like he has like a decent business knowledge as well as like just a confidence in his writing.
I think he's just good at sabotaging other people.
Just a professional backstabber.
Yeah, I don't even think he's probably good at like hyping himself up as he is good at tearing other people down.
That's what you want though, isn't it?
Yeah, so like he's good here at not being like, my creative vision is the only creative vision. He's good here at being like, oh, this Jerry guy, doesn't he suck?
Now let me tell you about this wonderful Brian Lawler story I have planned.
Because like Dave Meltzer makes a very good point at one stage in the Wrestling Observer this month where he talks about how if you're Panda and you're simply looking at Vince Russo's like press clippings and Vince Russo's whatever the equivalent of Wikipedia pages at the time, you see a guy who wrote for the WWF during its biggest period, you see a guy who wrote for WCW, you see a guy who's like, oh, this guy was a creative force in the two biggest wrestling companies that existed in the last 20 years. So if you're Panda who knows nothing, you're like, well, you know, this Vince Russo guy might know what he's talking about. And if you're a wrestling fan, you're like, no, he doesn't.
Just get one guy in there going, no.
It goes most of the month where Jerry is like, it seems like the Panda people are souring on me, and I can't quite tell why.
Poor Jerry.
It goes all the way to an October 24th meeting where the shit kind of hits the fan, where everybody just starts burying the shows on a conference call that has Chris Sabal and Dixie Carter on it, and Jerry is not best pleased that he basically finds out that everyone in the room hates him, everybody has been working behind the scenes to kind of sabotage him and align with Vince Russo. And the worst part of it is, it seems like Jeff has been too.
Yeah, what the fuck, Jeff?
Because there's notes in the press that Jeff is trying to like stay above it and stay out of it in a way that's kind of like, actually, I'm secretly backing Russo here.
What a dick.
Being like, I don't want to intervene in this backstabbing, so I will simply let it continue to happen.
I will be complacent in the backstabbing of my father.
Poor guy. So yeah, it reached a stage where he's borderline issued an ultimatum where he wanted out of the company, didn't want to write the shows anymore. And he figured people would be loyal to him. People like Sixpack, people like Scott Hall, Kurt Hennig, and Mike Tenay probably wouldn't stay if he was forced out. And he wasn't by the end of October yet anyway, so it had not come to that yet. But the entire month is literally a power struggle that did spill over into the public. Like, once that October 24th meeting went down, where, like, the Vince Russo's intentions kind of became clear, that immediately became public and spilled out.
But they told everyone so nicely not to leak things.
Yeah, but then Jerry got backstabbed and started leaking things himself.
Yeah.
You know what my absolute favorite thing actually is? Because the way I research this podcast is I go through all the shows, outline what happened, then go through PW Torch for the era, go through Wrestling Observer for the era, and then go through Jerry's book for the era. And my absolute favorite thing is, like, because I read Torch first and then read Jerry's book last, so often is there, like, direct quotes from Jerry's book that were just in the Torch.
I wonder who could possibly be leaking things.
I wonder who told Wade Keller that. Could possibly be Jerry.
I respect Jerry a lot coming out of this. I just, like, his whole... Well, first of all, his complete and utter dismissal and distaste for Vince Russo, which is always going to appeal to me. And be like, his idea of, like, let's just do wrestling.
And he might have some bad ideas, but his ideas are rooted in doing wrestling. Oh dear. So yeah, that power struggle played out most of the month as Vince Russo tried to ingratiate himself with the Carters and as Jerry Jarrett desperately tried to cling onto the company which he poured a ton of money into and is trying to keep open.
No good deed goes unpunished.
It doesn't, especially when your son sides with the goober who has terrible creative ideas.
Damn it, Jeff, what the fuck?
Yeah, really? Like really? Like, Jeff is like, I want to start a wrestling company, Dad. And his dad is like, all right, I'll put help. My money in. Yeah, and then Jeff goes and does this to him.
Can't trust your kids, obviously.
No, you really can't. And that's what happens when you become business partners with people you, like, are family members with, because realistically those relationships are not relationships you choose, but relationships that are foisted upon us by the freaking DNA. So
the DNA of TNA.
Hey, that's not for another 4 years.
I wonder if this led to like any sort of a strenuous relationship between the Jarretts at the time.
Oh, it did. They famously fell out after the foundation. Yeah, they didn't talk for years and years and years after all this eventually like washed itself out.
I wish they still didn't. I wish they just never got over it.
I'm pretty sure they did reconnect, and they are at the very least on talking terms. But yeah, coming out of all of this, Jerry pretty understandably felt pretty betrayed by his son.
I would too. Not for like backstabbing me and kicking me out of the company, but for siding with Vince Russo on anything ever.
Yeah, it would be one thing if you sided with somebody who was at least good, but you chose Vince Russo over me?
Ugh, it's worse than death.
There's an interesting note, PW Torch, a Time Warner source insists that Jerry Jarrett had a conversation with Brad Siegel regarding a possible television deal for TNA, but Siegel was against the idea. Siegel famously the person who basically killed WCW by cancelling it. So they were trying to get themselves onto TBS or TNT, and Brad Siegel was like, no.
No, thank you.
Now, to be fair, and another major note for the month, Hermie Sadler, of course, your favorite person in TNA, Hermie Sadler. He was racing the NWA TNA-sponsored car in a race that was carried on TNT, so they did get on TNT via Hermie Sadler.
No.
You seem very enthusiastic about the prospect of talking about Hermie Sadler's racing career.
I don't want to talk about Hermie Sadler. Ever.
A note later in the month, despite finishing the time trials, the TNA-sponsored car driven by Hermie Sadler did not finish the October 2nd race. The car is said to be completely new, and those who know NASCAR say it's rare that a new car performs well in its first actual race, apparently. I didn't know you had to brake in a car, but according to the NASCAR expert, we should ask John Cedor whether this NASCAR wisdom is right, that you have to brake in a NASCAR car.
Yeah, we should. And we should also ask about the career of one Hermie Sadler.
In that he was a successful rookie in like 92 or something and then never really achieved anything in his entire NASCAR career.
Seems about right.
There's a quote in Jerry's book as well where he's like, I sat down on Saturday to watch the NASCAR race, but I did not see the TNA car because Hermie did not do good enough.
Which was referenced on TV too.
Hermie had said that the TV executives were willing to play the wrestling clip, but then he was like, I guess because Hermie was nowhere near doing well, they didn't bother. This was the month where the Panda news did actually leak out publicly in the middle of the month, so everyone knew that it was Panda that was negotiating with TNA, or that wasn't the case in September. They managed to keep that quiet, at least until the middle of October.
Sorry, I'm just reading the Don Harris Nazi stuff.
I put this in because it's amazing that you see this every time people do
things. This is the same defense you see on like every Twitter from someone who knows someone.
So, from the PW Torch, defenders of Don Harris, who was criticized for wearing a well-known Nazi symbol on a t-shirt he wore on an NWA TNA pay-per-view several weeks ago, is that he is a genuinely good guy who does not express racist views in his everyday life. His defenders say that he wore it as a biker rebellion symbol, without considering the implications of what the symbol meant, and what the symbol means, to many white supremacist organizations.
Did he consider those implications of the symbols when he got it tattooed on his skin?
You do see it every time there's somebody who does something horrible and racist. It's like, oh, you know, he's a nice guy. He never says anything racist to me. He just has the Nazi symbol on his t-shirt.
That's like from the same people who are like, oh, you know, you can have different views and still be friends. Not when it comes to that. Not when it comes to literal Nazism.
That's always the thing, because like that used to be a thing people rolled out when it's like you disagreed about fiscal policy. You disagree about the role of the government.
And it's right to an extent.
Yeah, then you're like, oh, you know, if you agree about the correct monetary policy, it's okay to disagree about that and get along. It's not okay to disagree about denying people's right to exist and then getting along.
You can disagree about which AJ Styles Loki match you liked more. But people's fundamental rights to live? Nah.
That's not something we can just be pals and agree to disagree on.
I've always hated that defense because it's like, well, everyone's going to have their thresholds that once they're reached, then the answer is just no.
So, yep. I have never in my life, Liam. Never in my life. I'm 29 years old. I've never accidentally worn a Nazi symbol. Like, it just, it doesn't happen. You don't accidentally wear Nazi symbols.
Mm. You know, sometimes you're going out, you know, you have a marker and, oh no, I accidentally drew some funny symbols on my shirt. Oh, it turns out it was a swastika. You know that fun scenario that always happens and plays out that way?
And definitely is well-intentioned, and the person who does so is a genuinely good guy who does not express racist views, quote.
Mm, it's just the Buddha symbol. How could you get it misinterpreted?
As the year went on, as the panda deal continued to go through toward completion, Jerry Lynn and AJ Styles signed 26-day contracts with TNA.
And they also signed 26-day contracts to have 26 separate matches against each other.
Oh, how dare you. There's one next week as well, so you won't be getting away from these AJ Lynn matches. So we'll be talking about AJ and Jerry Lynn matches next in the episode in 2 weeks as well. But if you remember when they signed their original 26-day contracts, that was meant to cover a year because the idea was that they would tape two shows at once. But because they are doing shows live now, a 26-day contract will only cover 6 months, so they had to renew them. It would be funny if AJ and Jerry left.
And Ron.
Ron had not yet signed the deal, but imagine we know history. He stays, so I'd imagine he did sign the deal.
I don't know. Maybe.
He just end up being a champion. He just leave. It is kind of amazing that, like, if this were 2021... and AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn's deals came due after 26 weeks, somebody would have signed them. Like, they would not have stayed.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing that they could just offer these 26 deals to people like Jerry Lynn and particularly people like AJ Styles. And that AJ, like, WWE aren't all over them the second those deals are up.
It's a different time.
It so is. It's bizarre. And the only other note that we mentioned this last month, but it was covered this month, that Explosion has launched. So they have a weekly TV show on Urban America Network, which is a not particularly big station, but hey, syndication, where Explosion was on Tuesdays at 10:30. Explosion was hosted by Jerry Borash and Bert Prentice, who actually passed away a couple of weeks ago. So rest in peace, Bert, who had a very big role in the early days of TNA. We mentioned a couple of times he would have been a local Nashville promoter who would have helped TNA promote these shows, help set up these shows. And if you remember when we were talking about that show that Harrison Storm were discovered on, that was a Bert Prentice show. So rest in peace, Bert. But yeah, Explosion was up and running. It would host most of the dark matches and some highlights from it, the pay-per-views every week.
Desperately want to watch them.
Someday they'll be unearthed, maybe, perhaps. Another interesting, they did a silent auction through the month toward the DC Sniper Capture Fund.
The DC Sniper Attacks, also known as the Beltway Sniper Attacks, were a series of coordinated shootings that occurred during 3 weeks in October of 2002 in the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. 10 people were killed and 3 others were critically wounded in the Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area and alongside Interstate 95 in Virginia.
Sniper attacks are kind of particularly terrifying when you think about them, aren't they?
I think I've heard of these. Were these the dudes that were, like, in the back of their car?
Yeah, who were shooting, like, with a sniper rifle out the back of their car.
I've seen, like, some, you know, cinema retelling of it or whatever.
Did you see the episode of Criminal Minds that was basically a DC sniper episode?
Maybe that was it.
Because, yeah, there is an episode of Criminal Minds that is just entirely people shooting sniper rifles out the back of a car. And that was in, like, I think 2003. It's like, guys, it's a little raw. you don't have to make TV shows about it yet. So, yeah, TNA were raising money for a silent auction toward an autism charity. There was another charity as well. And partially toward the DC Sniper Capture Fund. So, yeah, the DC Sniper was captured, so I can only assume it was the TNA fund that did it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one for the good guys, you know? I wish that Dixie Carter came out onto NWA TNA pay-per-view 17 and was like, we have compromised to a permanent end.
We talked about the freaking watch-along about how TNA's untold influence, the TNA did everything first. That would be certainly something for TNA to do first.
Yeah, that's one of the best moments in WWE history.
Just standing on the table.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Remember when The Rock broke that news on Twitter?
Did he?
Yeah, he sent a tweet like a couple hours before it was actually public information that was just like, just heard news that will shock America, home of the brave, land of the free, blah-de-blah. Blah. He didn't actually say, like, we compromised.
He did.
He teased it. Like, The Rock teased it on Twitter before Obama announced it.
I love this country. Home of the brave, land of the free.
So there we go, that's the main news from October 2002. You got the DC Sniper Fund, and you get Vince Russo trying to boot Jerry out of his own company and steal power.
Yeah.
The two most important themes you could possibly have in a month of TNA.
Jerry should have tried to raise funds to open up TNA 2.
Already, in 2002, he's launching TNA 2.
Yeah. TNA V2, make it feel like it's TNA 1's old hat. This is the new TNA version 2.
It's like it's freaking All Japan and New Japan. It's the TNA split in 2002.
God, I wish there was a TNA split in 2002 with a big TNA walkout.
The All Japan Noah split.
Jerry goes and opens Global Force Wrestling.
Forever changing history and removing Global Force Gold.
I know, he'd definitely have Global Force Gold would be his weekly TV.
Hey, that would be, it's not a terrible TV show name.
Because you know how there's like these rumors of Global Force coming back?
Mm-hmm.
I desperately want their TV to be called Global Force Gold now.
You don't think they'll use the Amped name still?
I hope they don't use anything about what they used to have, because it all looked awful. To be fair, they had an aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Green.
They had an aesthetic for sure.
It was the color green.
Remember that cool Impact logo that had like the octagon?
It was a hexagon. There were six sides.
Yeah. Had the hexagon on it. It's a cool logo.
The Impact logo also had hexagons dotting the eyes and the exclamation point.
I never knew
if
that.
You never noticed that. Yeah, if you look at, you see the dots of the eye and the exclamation point.
So NWA TNA pay-per-view 15 happened on October 2nd, 2002 at the TNA Asylum.
Liam definitely wants us to pivot.
I was going to say, yeah, before we go into this, this is five shows, so...
So we'll do a little format change that instead of going through each and every match on each and every show, I figure we'll talk more broadly about the big things that happened, like the broader stories that ran through these shows, instead of being like, hey, Liam, how did you feel about that Ron Harris against Norman Smiley match?
I have thoughts, but sure.
So we will start with the tag team division, in which it was the month of AMW.
Yeah, this is the month where it really felt like these guys put it together and became a fully functioning tag team.
And they did, in fact, by the end of the month, by October 30th, they were AMW. They were not just Chris Harris and James Storm. They were America's Most Wanted.
Which I think is a cool bow on this month being that the month that they come together, you know? And they end it with, what's the finish called?
Death Sentence.
Death Sentence, yeah. Like they really wrapped it up all together perfectly. So if you were to do your AMW watch-along project, you start in October of 2002, maybe.
And it must be noted, Bobby Eaton, of course, passed away, that the Death Sentence was a move they used, wasn't it?
Oh, because it's the Alabama Jam?
Because AMW were the Southern tag team, like, throwback without being pretentious about it. You know, they weren't like, we're going to constantly talk about how we're a tag team, how they used to be. They just went out and did it.
It also helped that, like, you know, the teams that they were in there with weren't that at all. So it helped them stand out. Plus, they had, like, they were dynamic enough to stand out still.
Yeah, because this was a weird month where they had a title match literally every week. All the 5 weeks they had a title match. The first one was against Ron Harris and your pal, Liam, Ashley Hudson.
Why is he my pal?
He's Australian. Please speak about your representation. I've yet to be represented at all in the entirety of TNA history. I don't think there's been a single Irish
wrestler. Harris brothers have been on.
How dare you? How dare you? There has not been an Irish person yet.
Oh, you meant like that kind of heritage. Okay.
How do you feel about that kind of representation in TNA, Liam?
I don't know, man. He had a boomerang.
He did.
A beer.
Mm-hmm.
And the flag.
Yeah.
And an Akubra. So he's basically my dad.
So he did a dark match on September 26th and got this spot as Ron Harris's tag team partner. And the story of Ron Harris not being able to keep tag team partners, he's a longtime Memphis guy. They lost, so there you go.
And then he got beat up right after.
Yeah, which is the TNA trademark of, well, to be fair, you might also lose and get beat up constantly. So yeah, AMW went through the month. They defended the title against Harris and Hudson. They defended the titles against the Maximals, in which I think was the best, their best match of the month. That match ruled.
Yeah.
So much fun. Defended against the Chris and Rick Michaels, which I think was actually a super underrated little match.
Yeah, I like the Michaels sisters.
Chris and Rick Michaels are such, like, 2002 wrestlers.
Look at their gear. It's great.
But even like, the way they're built, like, physically.
Yeah.
They're just wrestlers you do not see in 2021.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an Orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They look like two Larry D's.
They do. They do look like the precursor to Larry D. They also defended against the Hotshots and then against the Hotshots and the Michaels. It's a nice little month where they had a bunch of like really good title matches. As you said, like the Maximus one was so good. Watch that Maximus match.
I was just going to say, like, this also felt like the first month that the tag division felt like its own central division and not just a story device for a feud.
It's interesting that they still don't really have a tag division, you know? The defenses this month are against Harris and Hudson, who aren't a team. The Maximals, who spend more time as X guys than they do as tag guys, really. They wrestle each other as much as they wrestle as a team.
Especially at this point.
And then you get the Hotshots and the Michaels, who are guys who just don't stick around. So, like, they're still working it out. They're still building a division. But, you know, you get a good month of title defenses. AMW still unbeaten. AMW winning 5 title matches in a row is the kind of thing that should help. And then we didn't even mention, they end the AMW month with, like, a kick-ass angle reintroducing the new church.
Yeah. Which, like, was a great reintroduction for them, too. Made them seem like real badasses.
Yeah, because the October 23 and October 16 shows ended with a teaser that evil is coming, evil is returning to TNA. And then October 30th, after AMW retaining as the Hotshots and the Michaels, James Mitchell returns with his revamped New Church, which is Brian Lee and Slash, which is, I think, the version of the New Church, which is far and away the best. No offense to Malice.
Oh, that sounds like some Malice disrespect.
But still, the team of Slash and Brian Lee is like the defining era of the New Church, and they had this just great return where, like, Brian Lee choke slams James Storm off the stage,
who does not want to take it at all.
Yeah, he eats shit. He just, like, takes this weird turning bump that looks like he dies. He disappears into
doesn't
nothing.
Get up for it at all, so it looks real, like, painful.
Yep, and then Slash hits a dive out of the stands through a table onto Chris Harris, and they're taken out, and evil reigns, and James Storm cuts up his usual promo about how the world is ending, and there's no love and goodness in the world, there's only evil, and the New Church are back. What a great reintroduction for the New Church.
It's a good month for the tag division. Good month for all of the divisions, really. Before we move off, I just want to, you know, one last mention that how appropriate it is, you know, for the Ashley Hudge and Ron Harris team to be on here, when it's just so representative of us as a team as well, you know? Long-haired Australian and
I have hair.
Bald Nazi, but, you know.
It's definitely the hair bit you were pointing out, didn't there?
Yeah.
Ron Harris did have a story running through the month where he would team with Siaki as well and fail to form a team, and then eventually they just team with the Harris. Like, the idea here is, like, the Harris brothers are not teaming, but then they eventually team. Like, that's the story.
There was also another PW Torch story at this time where it came out, defenders of Garrett Kidney who was criticized for wearing a well-known Nazi symbol on it.
He never said anything racist to me.
His defenders say that he wore it as a biker rebellion symbol without considering the implications of what the symbol meant.
I do not approve of being cast as a Nazi.
You asked me to come up with some new bits.
Oh, no. Garrett is a Nazi is not a bit I like.
You're right. Garrett is a Nazi is not a bit.
Oh, no. I'm being taken out of context. Oh, God.
From one division that was really successful to another one in the X division.
Yeah, there was a ton of X Division stuff this month. An absolute ton of it. More ladder matches than you could ever possibly want in your life.
I never want to see another one.
Because AJ Styles defeated Jerry Lynn in a ladder match. That this was the point at which I was both sick of ladder matches and sick of AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn matches.
Yeah.
Because these guys, to their credit, worked so hard. Like, yeah. They worked so hard, and I did not care.
Well, that's the problem with, like, repeated Jerry Lynn matchup with the same matchup with Jerry Lynn as well, because he doesn't change things up a lot. He's really good at doing his match, but if he has the same opponent over and over again, it's a very similar match each time.
And it's interesting, after this October 2nd show that had that ladder match, there was a note in Jerry's book, which actually, again, I mentioned the things that are quoted directly in the PW Torch. This quote was basically in the Torch as well. The X Division is already wearing thin. Unless we can develop storylines and characters within the division, the fans will grow tired of the spot fest. After you have seen the great athletic moves a dozen times, the wow factor gets old, which I disagree with.
I was going to say, I don't think I necessarily agree with that either.
I think you should stop doing the same match and stop doing ladder matches.
Which, to be fair, they do. They do incorporate some new match types throughout this month.
Yeah, they do the weird Iron Man match, which is thoroughly not successful, that Iron Man match.
I liked it.
It was Ace Steel against Loki against Tony Mameluke against Kid Cash in a 15-minute Iron match in which Ace Steel won 2-1-1-1, but Ace Steel got that pin after the 15 minutes was up.
Big Ace Steel month, too.
It is a very big Ace Steel month, but I was going to mention that, like, that AJ Styles-Loki match where they worked so hard, they did, like, everything you could possibly expect out of them, or AJ Styles-Jerry Lynn match, even. They did everything you could possibly hope for them, and it just wasn't interesting.
The AJ six-pack stuff from this month I thought was a lot more successful.
Especially because, like, you watch six-pack on these shows, and you are just like, oh, he's the best wrestler on these shows.
Yeah.
Like, by far, he's better than Jerry Lynn. He's better than AJ.
It's Timo Styles.
I think he's a better... Like, it's because it's 2000 AJ, and AJ's a lot more raw these days. But I think he's just a better wrestler than AJ. Like, everything he does looks good. Like, it's just those things where it's like, he does those spin kicks, and he does dives, and, like, every move... Except he tries to do an X-Factor on Brian Lawler on one of these shows, and Brian Lawler couldn't even take an X-Factor. But other than that...
I don't want to anything bad-mouthing Brian Lawler on these shows. I'm a Brian Lawler stan now.
We are in the X division at the moment. You wait till talk about Brian Lawler.
If I have to.
Because there was a ladder match at the end of NWA TNA pay-per-view number 16, October 9th, where I felt so bad for the people in this match. Where you get the Maximos, you get Loki, you get AJ Styles, you get Ace Steel, and you get Tony Mameluke just tearing the house down. And, like, I don't think this was, like, an all-time great ladder match. There have been better constructed ladder matches than this. There have been ladder matches that are better put together than this. I don't think there has been a more chaotic ladder match in the history of wrestling than this ladder match.
I thought all the Maximo stuff was really neat, because they did some really unique stuff. But honestly, for the most part, and this could have been a victim of me watching five of these shows in one day.
You shouldn't do that next time, please.
But I was, like, eyes glazed over watching this, just seeing bodies move and crash into things and being like, yep, sure.
But that was literally all this match was. It was like, let's do some just nasty, disgusting-looking bump over and over again for, like, 15 minutes. Like, there was a spot where AJ and the Maximos were both on the ladder, and, like, the Maximos scaled the side of the ladder, and then AJ knocked the ladder off to fall on one of the Maximos. And it's just like, good lord, why have you done this?
There was, like, some one that I really loved where it was, like, each Maximo was squished in between a pair of ladders in the corner.
Oh, yes.
And then, like, got powerbombed into the last one.
They made a Maximo ladder sandwich.
Mm.
There was a Spanish fly off a ladder. Like, this match, go back and watch it if you felt like you were, like, too drowsy to actually process it. Because it's, as I said, it's not like this really well put together ladder match. It's not like this great piece of wrestling. It's just utter chaos in a way that is entirely watchable.
That's the goddamn X Division right there.
But yeah, these guys killed themselves. Did sickest ladder bumps, and then Shawn Waltman just walked out and won the X title.
Yeah, like an asshole. And that goes to the whole, like, you know, theme of last month as well, but I hate this non-specified heels, face, tweener shit. It's so annoying. It's impossible to get behind anyone on these shows, because no one sticks to anything.
I'm trying to think, is there a single likable character in the month of October?
Bruce.
But Bruce isn't meant to be likable, so he can't count.
I count Bruce.
Is there a single character on any of these shows who is meant to be likable and is then thus likable?
Brian Lawler.
He's not meant to be likable.
Damn it. Mike Tenay.
Yeah, Mike Tenay is likable. AMW. No, AMW are likable. Yeah, we'll give it to AMW this month.
They're the only one that get over, yeah, in that aspect. Red?
Oh yeah, Red's another good one. Red is just the purest babyface you can ever get in your life. So there are some, but there are few and far between on these shows.
I'm sure you would say Ron and Don Harris.
Stop it. Leave me alone.
What? I'm just repeating the things that you told me off mic. I didn't know you didn't want your Ron and Don Harris positive thoughts out here for some reason.
You were the one that was like, you know what, I actually like them. It's a shame they're Nazis.
Whoa.
You said that on air. You said that on the podcast.
No, I didn't. I guess people will have to go buy the highest tier of our Patreon to find out if I did or did not say that.
God damn it. Patreon.com/kidding me to find out if Liam's a Nazi.
That's the highest reward tier.
Are we a Nazi? It's just yes or no. You just get a yes or no email. So yeah, X Division, Shawn Waltman won the X Division title from AJ and then lost it.
He had a busy month. He won it. He lost it. He stole Brian Lawler's girlfriend. He bragged about it.
Yeah, sorry, he won it from Jerry Lynn, technically. Lynn was the champion in that ladder match, even though he wasn't in the match, because Sonny Siaki injured him, which is another field we'll talk about in a minute.
Do we have to?
They produced some boring matches. But yeah, Styles and Lynn, good matches. Yeah. Or Styles and Waltman, good matches.
Well, yes. Yes to both.
Why do you sound so upset about them having good matches?
Oh, because the Lynn-Styles ones got very boring towards the end.
Yeah, and you have another one at the start of November, so...
Hey, maybe it's fun. The best one. Who knows?
I think, if memory serves, I think it is the best one. Or at least one of the best ones.
I said that because I had already received word that it was.
So we will cover that in 2 weeks. You'll have to wait to find out. Other X Division stuff, as we mentioned, there was a big Sonny Siaki against Jerry Lynn feud through the month.
Unfortunately.
Sonny Siaki is all over these shows. And I like Sonny Siaki, but there is too much Sonny Siaki on these shows.
I like him better just cutting promos.
And I think it's a problem with the pacing of a lot of these shows, where it's just like, Ron Killings will come out in an opening promo, then Ron Killings will have a match against Loki, then Ron Killings will come out for a brawl at the end of the show. Sonny Siaki will do a pre-tape backstage. Sonny Siaki will injure Jerry Lynn's legs. Sonny Siaki will then have a match against David.
Oh, you're cutting
Young.
A promo as if you were Sonny Siaki right now.
I'm Sonny Siaki.
Sonny Siaki will injure Jerry Lynn's leg.
Yeah, he does speak in the third person. And the same thing, Shawn Waltman will have a promo early in the show. Shawn Waltman will wrestle AJ Styles. Shawn Waltman will come out later again.
So many in-ring promos.
I think the problem is less the in-ring promos than it's in-ring promos from people you've already seen multiple times on these shows.
Because, like, to be fair, the one good one was the Jerry Lynn one. Because he hadn't been on a show from the week before or that week.
Yeah, it's weird that they're at least one of these shows has one person who's just all over them in a way that you get sick of them.
I don't know. I wonder whose call that was.
You're picking sides as well? You're choosing between Russo and Jerry Jarrett?
Yeah, I'm siding with Vince Russo.
I believe we have established canon that all the bad ideas are Russo's, yes. And the good ones are Jerry Jarrett's.
That's even canon. After Jerry leaves, I'm going to continue with that theme.
Other things in the X Division, we had Amazing Red win a couple of matches and then get a great X Division title match against AJ Styles in the last show of the month.
This might be my favorite pure match so far.
Because it's AJ being Power Junior, Red being like the plucky underdog babyface, which is the role he lives for. Great match. Great, great match on the October 30th show.
Great in-match storytelling too throughout it. It's definitely a highly recommended one.
And like for most of TNA history, AJ has weirdly been kind of a heel. But it's been kind of confusing because he started as like this pure babyface who's like the face of the company and then very quickly, weirdly became a heel for some reason.
But he's so great though. I love his character at the moment as weird asshole.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do think by the end of October, he's worked it out.
Well, surprisingly, Mortimer Plumtree has been like kind of a tremendous addition to the character.
Yeah, because that's another reoccurring story through the month where Mortimer Plumtree is recruiting X Division wrestlers. He first recruits Ace Steel and realizes he's probably going to get nowhere with Ace Steel, so he also recruits AJ Styles.
To be fair, the week that he recruited Ace Steel for $250,000 signing bonus, Ace Steel had a good week.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's the guy. Let's back this up. Oh, no.
Isn't that just a funny representation of like the whole TNA choice to like, hey, we had Punk and Ace Steel. Who are we going to give a singles push to? Ace Steel. The other guy, let's not put him on TV again.
He does come back.
Eventually.
So the AJ you see in this Red match, I think, is the AJ like that has finally worked out how to both be and wrestle as a heel.
Just be mean and fuck people up for real.
Yeah, just do like cool brainbusters. Red will take him. Do we have anything else in the X Division this month? There's like Kid Cash is there.
Yeah, Kid Cash is just killing it like he normally does.
Having good matches. We get a Shark Boy match, which I'm always on board.
Shark
with.
Boy was over as shit.
Because he's freaking Shark Boy. You just look at the dudes. It's like, yeah, I'm going to root for the Shark Boy. He's a man in a shark costume. What more do you want in life?
The heel section was in full force now.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of Chad on these shows. We were debating whether or not some people were Chad.
I stand by that that wasn't Chad on the last show. So Chad was there at the start of the month because there was a www.tnachad.com sign. But Chad, we're out there. Come back, Chad.
Maybe he moved to the heel section.
I'd hope not. That would break my heart.
He is hashtag heel. He's the original Dolph Ziggler.
There were some great signs, of course, that we saw throughout this month.
Oh yeah, on the like the category of compromising to a permanent end.
Yes. Here we go. We had Saddam fears the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the old time sign, totally nuke Al-Qaeda.
It's a sign, all right. That's definitely a sign that was on the show.
That's like some peak Attitude Era sign shit right there.
These are weird signs just to be in October. Because, like, the US didn't invade Iraq until, I think it was early 2003, wasn't it?
Well, clearly they heard Dixie with her award-winning announcement earlier on in the month.
Yeah, it's a strange one. That there's weirdly so many... I guess it's the cultural consciousness of the time. But, there wasn't a bunch of random Al-Qaeda signs in the shows before this. And now there are.
The asylum's standing up what they believe in.
There's also some very bad homophobic signs about Bruce, but we won't talk about those.
I don't hear anything disparaging about Bruce ever.
There was some homophobic chants toward Bruce as well, but we won't talk about those.
Tisk tisk.
We'll move into the heavyweight division, I suppose. The big thing in the heavyweight division throughout the month was the debut of Kurt Hennig.
Now that guy.
Because Scott Hall missed a bunch of these shows because he had personal issues at home, which are varied. According to Jerry's book, he was having issues with custody of his children. But when you see when Scott Hall does show up on these shows on the October 23rd show, he doesn't seem like the same razor-sharp no. Scott Hall that he was at the early days of TNA.
Which is funny because it's only been like a few months.
Yeah, like he's slurring his words in his promo. He looks just out of it.
Yeah, and he looks worse too, like physically.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, he still actually has a pretty good match with Ron Killings.
Mm.
For a guy who does not look entirely there anymore. And it's a shame, because, like, we saw the side of Scott Hall that everyone always wants to see. You know, the guy who is, like, a truly great wrestler, a much better wrestler than the vast majority of other wrestlers.
And then we saw the other side of Scott Hall.
Yes, the side of Scott Hall that his demons are perhaps catching up with him again. But, yeah, you got Kurt Hennig, who's in a weird place in his life. Kurt Hennig cuts a promo, like, on the, I believe it's the October 16th show, he cuts a promo where he does the I'm the guy who took down Brock Lesnar at 35,000 feet line. And it's actually quite cool because, like, why not? Dudo shoot promos on these shows, I don't care. Unlike the AEW Twitter account we mentioned earlier, I'm fine with taking shots at other companies.
These are the seven reasons TNA sucks. Too many shots at WWE.
Kurt Hennig coming out because, like, this is October 2002. Kurt Hennig passes away in February 2003, and, like, when you see him on these shows and when you look at him and you can see how, like, puffy his face is, and how, again, similar to Scott Hall, he's not as bad as Scott Hall, but he just doesn't look entirely well here, does he?
He looks a little rough.
And it's nice to have the star power, because I think the show needs it. And it's nice to have a little month where he has a couple title matches against Ronkin. Neither of them are very good at all. They're actually quite bad. But I think that's the saddest thing about watching him in this era. Like, anything after, like, the end of his peak in the WWF. Because you watch him during his peak, and he is, like, legitimately one of the best wrestlers of all time. Like, he does that bumping and feeding heel better than I think literally anybody else ever has. So when you watch him in this era where he's basically doing nothing...
Yeah,
it's not even that he's bad. It's not even that he's fallen over the place. He just is. Nothing happens in his matches, so
they're just kind of boring.
Yeah, it's just boring matches where nothing happens. But he's a welcome bit of star power while he's here.
Yeah, he has a cool. That's one thing we can mention that we haven't brought up yet. There's a series of really cool Mike Tenay sit downs on this month.
Yeah, it's their new format where he has a sit-down interview with Scott Hall, he has a sit-down interview with Sean Waltman, he has a sit-down interview with Kurt Hennig. And it's usually like, hey, let's go over the past, let's talk about your narrative, your story, let's sit weirdly close to each other in the case of the Sean Waltman one. like, he's literally sitting on top of Sean Waltman.
He did love Sean Waltman.
But yeah, those promos with Mike Tenay, they're good ideas. They're always what, like, I think everyone says, like, AEW should be doing with Jim Ross. Those kind of, like, sit-down interviews that add depth to the characters and use the gravitas of the likes of Mike Tenay or the likes of Jim Ross to elevate the stories and elevate the wrestlers. It works.
Yeah, 100%.
As we go through what else happened in the heavyweight division, Killings was mostly tied up with Mr. Perfect, but there was the reoccurring Mr. Wrestling 3 story, Liam.
This is my description of this. Rehashing the Bullet Bob stuff with a heel Klansman.
If you remember, at the end of September, we mentioned that Vince Russo pitched a KKK story with Ron Killings.
Oh, I forgot that this thing was actually supposed to be a Klansman. I just thought it was a dude that looked like a Klansman.
And there's a quote in the PW Torch at the start of the month after the October 2 pay-per-view and Mr. Wrestling 2 debuts. The verbiage scripted by Vince Russo regarding the racist aspects of the opening show on October 2 was toned down considerably once Jerry Jarrett and the wrestlers involved got through with it. Quite a bit would have to be rewritten anyway, because Russo originally scripted the opening of a promo to involve Hall, who was not available. Ron Killings is said to be resigned to having to do the racist storyline, even though he's not crazy about it.
Also the fact that, like, every single fucking story he's done so far has had some sort of racial overtone or undertone.
Even when he weirdly turned babyface for a few weeks and then turned heel again.
Well, that doesn't count, because everyone does that shit.
He doesn't feel he has the seniority to speak up against it. There was a lot of disgust expressed in many circles that TNA officials tried to say with a straight face that the person attacking Killings wearing all white wasn't meant to have KKK undertones. And we know, from Jerry's book, Vince Russo expressly pitched a KKK story. The defense they had for the angle repeated to several people was, just wait until it plays out before.
I hate this. I hate this attitude of just wait till it plays out. Like, yep. just no. Like, I get, like, you know, make it, you can do nuance, but Jesus Christ, not in this particular case, but also it's like a lot of time you have to start, you can't start off fucking badly and then go, wait till it plays out. Start off strong and go, all right, let's see how it goes. Like, it's frustrating.
But yeah, for them to do something, again, if you remember from Jerry's book, he expressly pitched a KKK story and then had a man in all white jump Ron Killings.
Mm.
Now, you can deny all you want, but this is the man who's getting the ear of Panda Energy.
Old Grand Wrestling 3 over here.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Yeah, so most of the title matches ended with Mr. Wrestling 3 interfering in some way. It wasn't particularly good, who cares? But that's the story they're telling through the month. They didn't do the reveal until the following month.
Who could it be?
Well, it's Steve Armstrong, if you're wondering who's playing it. Which, by the way, is the same person who played the Bullet before it was revealed to be PG James.
Gosh. I just wonder who it's going to be revealed as.
Yeah, we'll never know.
I mean, we will when we watch the show.
Well, yes, I think that's November. Surely. They don't stretch that out for a whole other month. If they did, that would be madness.
Yeah, that would be madness.
There's many things that are madness. You had the Hermie Sadler return. He had a match with BG James against Jarrett and Bruce. You don't want to talk about Hermie?
He's been really mean to Bruce. I don't like it.
There is some transphobia and gay panic going on with Bruce again this month.
But, like, extra. There's just some lines, like, I know I shouldn't get irked by it, but some of these lines, you can't help but go, ugh.
Even like BG says at one stage, I can't remember the exact line, but it's something to the effect of, I knew you weren't all man, Bruce, but I didn't know you weren't either, Jeff. I'm like, fuck off. And like, it's weird, because, like, I think September, the Bruce segments still had some gay panic, but wasn't as bad.
Yeah, they toned it down, I think they toned it down a ton when he was doing the, like, wrestling women stuff.
Mm.
It's as soon as he's back into a feud with fucking dudes and Hermie fucking...
You really hate Hermie Sadler.
He's awful, man.
He is, but, like, who cares?
I do when I have to watch him on my screen.
That's true. Bruce also spins off into a feud with the Elvises. Oh, well, the remaining Elvis, I guess. It's just Jorge.
The Elvis.
And he has Priscilla. There's a fun note when Priscilla debuts. Priscilla is Joni, the woman Jerry Lawler has been dating since he and Stacy separated. Lawler has written recent website updates lamenting the end of his relationship with Carter, which must be thrilling for Joni. That note is on October 16th. Then there's a note after the October 30th show. The woman who plays Priscilla is no longer with Jerry Lawler. The two broke up before she started the new role, so... There you go.
We also got the debut of a whole new lighting rig. I just want to mention it because it made the show look real. Oh, we get to talk about the Asylum updates.
I'll start with the lighting rig. That was actually actively a move by Panda. They invested another $10,000 into the production values of the show. It was in Jerry's book on October 4th.
Very noticeable.
Today was spent working on the deal with Panda. We had conversations with Dixie concerning the new budget. Panda has already decided to upgrade the lights and production truck at the events. Bob Carter wants us to spend more money on the TNA girls. Bob loves the TNA girls.
Yeah, I bet he does. Me and Bob, but we're just there for Lollipop. Candy? Lollipop? Whatever her name was. Her name was Lollipop because she had the lollipop.
Yeah, you seem to forget Lollipop's name, even though she is your favorite woman.
I think it's because her name should be Candy.
Why? Why should her name be Candy?
I don't know. I think Lollipop is just, it's wordy.
Her name is Lollipop because she eats a lollipop while she does her dancing. She does not eat candy.
Me and Bob, big Lollipop fan.
So, yes, what else did you want to mention?
The new seating that makes the arena look a lot bigger.
Yeah, and they opened up the top tier so that they have more people there, which is fine. Because if you look at the attendance for these shows, October 2 has 700 people. October 9 has a sellout of 1,400, which we'll talk about why in a moment. October 16 has 450. October 23 has 850. And October 30 has 500 people. But as you mentioned, it looks much better just with the layout of the building.
Yeah. And there's a whole new section for people to do jumps off now.
Oh, yeah, which is ideal. You want more freaking things for people to jump off.
So then Slash took advantage. Slash was like, I'm going to be the first guy to do it.
He is the first person to dive out of the stands in the history of TNA. So well done, Slash.
His influence.
As we mentioned, the October 9th show was a sellout for, not because they were super into the unannounced ladder match main event, but Chris Rock was there, Liam.
Yeah, and he had one of the best celebrity angles, run-ins, whatever, promos ever, because he got in and he got out.
Yeah, he's like, Goldilocks is in the ring, and she's like, welcome everybody, Chris Rock! Mike Tenay goes into full professor mode once again, giving you like the full detailed history of Chris Rock's career.
You should have done a sit-down with Chris Rock.
He's like, Eddie Murphy discovered him in a comedy club, and then he went on to have this astounding success. It's like, there you go. He comes out, he's like, NWA TNA is the best wrestling in the world, and then he leaves.
Yeah.
That's it. He actually, if you look at him, when Goldilocks is like, oh, thanks for coming, Chris, you can go now. Chris Rock almost looks confused, like, oh, that's it.
Oh, he looks very confused to have been there, but he got in, he got out, and that's all that matters.
He did, well, like, he seemed enthusiastic, he seemed happy to be there, but like, when the segment was cut, it's just like, oh, wait, I'm literally here 40 seconds? Okay.
He's like, all right, I'll do it. So why was Chris Rock here?
Chris Rock was here filming a scenes for his movie, which I realize I did not put the name of the movie in the notes. Damn it, it's Head of State, I think, is the name of the movie. 2003 movie, it wasn't released the next year. We filmed scenes for that movie, and yeah, I meant to watch the movie.
Should we watch
week.
The movie, do a watch-along for
it? I'm not sure, could we do a watch-along? Do you want to do a review of Head of State for the Patreon?
Yeah, sure.
Because I actually meant to watch it. I started downloading it this week, but I meant to watch it, and then I forgot to actually watch the movie. So yeah, they do a scene with JB. Yeah, we'll do a review of that for the Patreon. So cool. We'll do that for the $5 tier on the Patreon sometime over the next week, or a couple of weeks. So if you'd like to hear us review Chris Rock's Head of State featuring TNA, you can subscribe at patreon.com/.
Also coming soon, Watch Along of Mania.
Yeah, we're doing the 2010 WrestleMania as well. So it's going to be our biggest Patreon couple of weeks in terms of content in a while. So you can look forward to that. Yeah, Chris Rock!
Legitimate A-list guy.
Yeah, it's so rare that you get, like, legit A-list real celebrities that aren't Screech on wrestling television shows. And here he is, just Chris Rock.
I thought you were all about Scratch.
I know who he is, unlike you.
Not familiar.
You've never heard of Scratch. But yeah, Chris Rock is there, and he doesn't do much. Gets in and out, says TNA's great. What more do you want?
We should add the Chris Rock line to the intro from now on.
The NWA TNA is the best wrestling in the world.
Yeah, can we add that to the end of it? Just say yes.
We'll do it for this week, but not
no,
forever.
No, I want it forever. I want like our little intro song then. NWA TNA is the best wrestling company in the world. And it fades out, then we come in.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm being bullied.
You're welcome, fans.
All right, what else we got this month? We covered X Division, we covered Heavyweight Division. Ken Anderson did a dark match before the October 23 show.
Cool.
I'm sure very pleased about that.
Yep. I assume we've been waiting for the main story now.
I put it off long enough. Liam, talk about Brian Lawler.
Brian Lawler apparently decided to put it all together in October and become the best character on the show. I don't know how he did this, but the first four shows... Who really gives a shit, right? Doesn't matter. He's having pretty... He's actually... I think he's improved in ring. I think he's found his character a lot better now. Just... The fact that, like, he was ever meant to be taken seriously is hilarious. Because he's clearly, like, just a goofball. And it works so well. But we end it. We put it all together with the best angle in the NWA TNA history.
I feel like we have to talk about the October 23 one to set the table.
Oh, set the table then.
So, on October 23, there's a segment where... Brian Lawler is wrestling BG James, having their match. Then Six-Pac comes out on the ramp with his girlfriend April and just starts furiously making out with her.
Yeah, and she didn't want to.
Yeah, she says that she had nothing to do with that. She had no part in that. It was all Six-Pac. Brian Lawler's facial expressions as that is happening, as Six-Pac is making out with April, are absolutely tremendous.
It caused him physical pain.
His life is just melting before his eyes as his girlfriend is making out with his mortal enemy on the stage, and he's furious. And he just falls off the top rope. He is so upset at this that he's pinned by BG. Now there is another part of that where he's been consoled by the referee. He's not even mad about it. He's just devastated.
Yeah. By the way, this ref's a fucking dickhead. All right, he's making fun of my man who has gone through some real emotional turmoil right now. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? Crying? Oh, you're crying because your girlfriend kissed your mortal enemy on TV? Ooh, why would you cry about that? It's like, yeah, all right, dickhead.
So, yeah, later in the show, Sean Waltman comes out and he's just like, you know...
Oh, no, before that, we have Oh, no, you're right, sorry. I thought I got them mixed up because there's so many walking out talking segments.
Yeah, because Waltman has a match with Styles and then comes out later again.
Yeah.
And then April is like, oh, Brian, I had nothing to do with it. And Brian is like, okay, I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Before that happens, Brian comes out and he's like, hey, man, I don't blame you, Six-Pack. Like, I'm done with her. I'm going to move on. She's obviously not the one until she runs out and says, oh, it was all Six-Pack that did it. And to which Six-Pack goes, in a hilarious response, goes, I can't hear what she's saying. What are you saying?
There's also another great Six-Pack line in this promo where the crowd is chanting something at him. He's chanting, you suck or something, or you can't wrestle. And he's like, I know, some of you hate me. It's fine.
Pessimistic Six-Pack has been such a joy.
He's just like, I understand that some people have an irrational hatred of me, and that's okay. I've accepted it.
Yeah.
So then after Brian and April get back together, Brian is perfectly happy to accept this April explanation. You may now talk about the segment from October 30th.
So my man, big Brian Lawler, is coming out at this point, accompanied by, what's her actual name? It's April, right?
It's April. Way to not remember for April's name.
Oh, I did remember. That was clarifying.
Well, fine.
They come out together and there was this fan, and you can hear it in the live reaction, who pushes him, and I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty dangerous, you know, you do that, he's got full right to hit you, you know. He pushes him again, to which Brian Lawler shoot punches this dude in the face, exploding his nose, and my reaction to this was one of the most joyful moments of my entire life. Because hey, I did not expect this. Is one of the best like wrestler beats up a plant in the crowd segments I've ever seen in my life, because I didn't for a second think it was a plant. And then when the punch happened, it was a real punch.
It was.
Which we get the great visual of this fan like pissing blood out of his nose, and also Brian Lawler's like knuckles covered in the blood of this fan.
You cannot do justice just how much Brian Lawler made this man bleed with a shoot punch. He punched him right in the nose.
Yeah, just a perfect angle. Like, if this was TW, 100.
I love, like, that was the angle as well. It's like, they're like, we can't let you talk after that. Get out of here.
Yeah. And it's like, Brian Lawler rules now.
And now he's a badass. He's just punching out fans.
Yeah, but he's also a dope while he's doing it. It's great. We also had the segment with April and him backstage where April's giving him the Maurice fuck eyes. Oh, that's only a reference that the Patreon guys will get. Giving the Maurice fuck eyes to and then as Lawler goes in to kiss her, she's like,
She's literally pulling her head in any direction to keep it away from Brian Lawler's mouth.
Yeah. This is also a bigger, just to briefly divert from Brian Lawler, if we must, a big Goldilocks month as well. She was all over these shows.
Because, like, she's every backstage interview, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
She doesn't get much abuse this month, though, to be fair.
She gets real smelt up by Sunny Siaki.
Yeah, Siaki creeps on her after talking to her about consent, like, a month ago.
I know. A double standard.
Typical men. Oh god, it is typical men. No. Yeah. The worst thing is when you like start to make a joke about something and then you realize, no, it's not the joke, it's just life. It's just horrible. How it is.
Yeah.
I think the only other big thing this month was the NWA title rule change, where Rob Armstrong comes out in the last show of the month and announces that from now on titles can change hands on a DQ.
And I'm sure this will stay relevant for the rest of TNA's history.
It actually does.
What?
That stays a rule in TNA for the entirety of the period where the NWA titles. It goes out the door when they replace them with the TNA titles.
Boo, you got my hopes up then.
It's a rule until like 2007.
That's still pretty impressive.
I think there's times where they don't entirely obey it, but like they do DQ title changes up until the end of 2006, so...
All right. That's pretty
You neat. Can look forward to those!
I was going to say the only like other thing that we've kind of skipped over is like the Jeff Jarrett, BG James, Ron Killing stuff, but that's because it's boring and there's not much of note to really say about it.
It's so boring. Like, Jarrett has a match against Kurt Hennig at the end of the month where he just beats the living hell out of him and bloodies him, and you were looking forward to that match, and then it doesn't happen. So yeah, we got kind of goofball Jeff Jarrett where he's wrestling Herbie Sadler, but then, you know, we come back to Stone Cold Jeff Jarrett.
When you hear the glass, that's your ass, you know? Ha ha ha. Ain't I great? Slap nuts. 316, you know, all of his famous sayings.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much October done.
Yeah, oh, well, we can't end it without addressing the month of October, of course. The cosplay.
Oh, there was a bunch of fans in the crowd who were right in the front row, right next to the ramp, who were cosplaying as... I'll pull a screenshot of this for the Twitter, and I might throw it in the show notes as well. They were cosplaying as Mortimer Plumtree, tremendous cosplay.
Yep.
Bruce, tremendous cosplay. And then a pretty good AJ.
And the pose, too. That's like the next thing for Bruce.
And even he had the Mortimer Plumtree pose down as well. He was doing like the chin scratching thing Mortimer Plumtree does.
The AJ cosplay was good. It's just a very easy cosplay to do.
It's just a t-shirt and a headband.
Mm. He had the haircut, though, so and he had the necklace, so I will give him... At least he did the details.
Yeah, so there were some absolutely top-notch cosplays on these shows. Fair play to fans who put in that kind of effort.
Mm. It's the best part. What about, like, WWE going to Japan?
Mm.
See all the great cosplay from it.
I think this is a better format for covering these shows instead of being like, what do I have to say about this Maximo's against Flying Elvis's match? It was actually pretty good. But, you know, the inconsequential stuff, you don't want to talk about Sonny Siaki against David Young. I have nothing to say about that match. So I think talking about in broad strokes and covering the big points and covering the broader narratives and the interesting stuff is a little smoother than getting bogged down in the details of matches you probably have no interest in hearing about. But if you hated it, let us know on Twitter at TNA History Pod, on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. You can hit us up there. We're usually hanging around the You've Got to Be Kidding Me channel there. Or if you're one of our patrons, let us know on Patreon.
So when David Young returned to TNA, I took umbrage with Mike Tenay's statement that... He said at one point that David Young used to be a staple when he was actually... He's more consistent now.
Yeah, he was on like two shows.
Yeah, I think he was on three this time. So he's technically more consistent now than he was then.
So David Young is now a staple of TNA Wrestling.
Mm.
I like the way I'm like, we have nothing to say about David Young. I'm like, no, you're like, no, I do have something to say about David Young.
Yeah, let me just check my notes to make sure we got through everything. Feels like a big transition month. That's a good point to end it, right?
It does feel like a pretty... I think it's similar enough to September in that it does feel like this is a coherent month of wrestling, where like they're telling their coherent stories that are consistent from month to month, and Scott Hall is the only one who's kind of disappearing due to reasons. And for the most part, it's just like, again, they have their consistent roster... And they're kind of treading water at the moment because they're still waiting for the Panda deal to go through. And as we mentioned, power struggle. But yeah, it feels like they have a coherent, consistent identity now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes to them spotlighting the X Division so heavily this month.
Mm. And also, they had match graphics, which were cool.
Oh, they were dope.
Yeah, they had the motion graphics where people did poses and turned around.
We should always do motion graphics. They're so much cooler.
It's funny because like wrestling is such a low bar to please fans. Like all WWE had to do was like motion graphics for WrestleMania and people lost their shit. It's like, why doesn't wrestling just always do this?
Yeah, I'm just looking to see if I had any more funny notes. I just had one that says desperate for anti-woman sentiment.
You are always desperate for
anti-woman.
You just want women to be degraded and demeaned at all times. Listen, if you're going to cast me as a Nazi, I'm going to cast you as a sexist.
I'd rather be a sexist than a Nazi.
That's true. But still, I'm pretty sure sexism comes inherently with being a Nazi, but still. So that is the month of October 2002. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at TNA History Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Garrett Kidd. You can follow Liam on Twitter at The Gleet Muda. You can support us on Patreon if you like the show, where you'll get our second show covering the 2010 Monday Night Wars. You'll get watch-alongs of a pay-per-view per episode of the podcast. You'll get written reviews, which I'm kind of behind on, but I will catch up on over the next 2 weeks. You'll get our show notes, you'll get our star ratings. So that's all there on Patreon. Three tiers: $1, $5, $10. And as we mentioned, we'll do a review of Chris Rock's Head of State over the next 2 weeks, and we'll also be having a watch along of WrestleMania 2010. That's WrestleMania 26, I believe. So you can look forward to all of that on our Patreon at patreon.com/kiddingme. We'll be back in 2 weeks covering November 2002, which is the month where Pando officially buys TNA. Spoilers. But that's what you can look forward to then. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
Boom. It's my thing now.
You're doing booms.